Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
And now, a story of a dream gone terribly wrong. In the 1960s, Elliot and Sue Coleman were two idealistic hippies from relatively well-to-do families who packed all their possessions into a pickup and moved to Maine to become disciples of Helen and Scott Nearing, whose book, Living the Good Life, was the Bible of the Back to the Land movement. Elliot and Sue also built a house with their own hands, lived without electricity or running water, as their daughter Melissa recounts.
My parents lived the good life, as defined by the Nearings, striving to follow the Nearing formula of 4 hours a day of bread labor, 4 hours of intellectual pursuits, and 4 hours of social time. In other words, divide the day between hands, head, and heart. Hands, chopping wood, making food, woodworking, sewing. Head, reading, learning to play the dulcimer. Heart, caring for each other. Talking and laughing together.
Melissa Coleman was born in 1968, followed 4 years later by Heidi. They'd run naked through the Maine woods with the often equally naked young men and women eager to become apprentices in this vanguard organic food movement. Even the Wall Street Journal came to write about them. But within years, Melissa's dad's overactive thyroid made him manic. Her overworked mother slipped into depression. It seems to us that the lifestyle didn't cause little Heidi's death by drowning in the pond, but she became a sad symbol of this paradise lost. Melissa Coleman tells the story in her book, This Life is in Your Hands, One Dream, 60 Acres, and a Family's Heartbreak. It recently was released in paperback. We spoke to Melissa when the book first came out and asked, did she agree? Was it lifestyle that caused Heidi's death, or was this something tragic that could have happened in a backyard suburban pool?
Well, I believe that the second is more likely. You know, for me, this was just a really wonderful childhood in so many ways. And I'm very glad that I was able to experience what I did experience, and my family as well.
For your mom, it was hard work because she's not only bearing children and, you know, full-time mom, but seaweed needs to be hauled up from the ocean to cover the garden beds and provide potassium. Carrots and beets have to be put in sand in the root cellars. Winter squash seasoning on the patio. Your dad's building a greenhouse, chopping wood. This is hard.
Yes, it was amazingly hard. They were up for the challenge, though. They felt that at that time that was the best way to channel their energies.
Yeah, but it obviously soon became exhausting. And also, what had been freeing seemed to become rigid.
Yes, I think originally they were seeking to be free. And then soon they realized they didn't have any time to do those things they were imagining doing with their freedom.
Also, they had made such a vow to themselves and had so disdained what was happening in the outside world, some of it pretty disdainful. You know, we were seeing the beginning of factory farming and chemicals in foods. They were, your father in particular, was ahead of his time.
Yeah, I think of it as a pendulum. You know, it had to swing way far over to make a difference, to make a change.
And then there's the fame.
Right. My face was the picture on the cover of the Wall Street Journal in 1971. I guess it was one of the most written in about articles that year.
The article was about how your mom and dad had rejected, you know, their parents' lifestyles and moved up to this hippie commune with the Nearings. But your dad was also really making points about organic food in particular.
People thought this sounded great. There was also the encroaching energy crisis. And people wanted to try to kind of step outside of what they saw as troublesome times and do it themselves.
Yeah. Right. Well, and your family was living on $2,000 a year, but now there's this influx. There's these young people who want to throw off the shackles and, by the way, most of their clothing and come up to the compound. And there's the tourists who want to come and buy this good organic food using, you know, really some relatively new thinking at the time. That was good in a way, but it was more pressure, particularly on your mom.
Right. You know, as there were more and more people at the farm, it was more and more people to take care of in a way. They were like more children. And my mother was having hard enough time, I think, with her own children. She loved the apprentices. She liked them a lot. But she needed privacy in her days to sort of regain her composure.
Yeah. Well, and then, of course, comes the day that, you know, Heidi, she's 3 years old, is found face down in the pond. And, you know, there's not any horrible neglect. A lot of families can't survive that. Yours didn't. Was part of this book to, I don't know, commune with her? How does her death fit into this story of this unraveling utopia?
When I had kids of my own, I started to think a lot about my little sister and worry. You know, if we couldn't save my sister, I worried, how could I be sure I could save my own children? And so I had to write about it to understand what happened. And in the process, I got an unexpected gift, and that was that I realized, okay, maybe I couldn't have saved my sister, but I can bring her back to life on these pages.
And what about the other characters? Your dad went on to become a renowned leader in the organic food movement. Your mom went on a lot of journeys before she seemed to find peace. The Nearings passed. They were ancient then. And now there's sort of a center devoted to them on the spot where this all happened that, by the way, has electricity and all the things that you lived without, you know.
Right.
How have those people responded to the story?
Well, you know, it's funny. When I was writing the book, I was just trying to get the story. I was like a mystery. I was trying to solve what happened. I had to track people down, do research. And then when the book came out, though, I had this just feeling of like, oh, my gosh, what have I done? You know, I've put this out into the world, and I don't know how it's going to be. You know, I don't know if they're going to like it. My parents, how are they going to feel about it?
So how did they respond?
They have responded by just being amazingly generous about it. I think it's been really hard for them, but they understood that I needed to tell my story, and they gave me the freedom to do that.
And I'm just wondering, have you heard from any other kids who are sort of children of the flower children of the late 60s, early 70s?
Yes, that's been a great part about this. People say, oh, that's really how it was like. And then to hear from some of the other apprentices that show up at readings and bring pictures just to reconnect with a time that it'll never be quite like that again.
For its wonderfulness and its flaws.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And hopefully we can learn from history and try to today be more balanced about our choices. You know, you can have an organic garden without living without electricity. There's lots of middle grounds, I think, today that are available to us.
That's Melissa Coleman. We spoke last May. Her book, This Life is in Your Hands, One Dream, 60 Acres, and a Family's Heartbreak, has just been released in paperback.